How are the kids, CeeLo? All right?
Oh, you know, crazy as usual.
Yeah.
Keeping me busy, as yours are as well.
And you got out of fantasy football this year.
Yeah. Well, I got roped into a league with my neighbors, which was fine. Then I learned that the entry fee was $300, which is like triple what our league is here.
That wasn't part of the conversation before?
No, it was not. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll join the league. I figured, you know, it was just a standard fantasy
league.
Winner
take all?
They have there's a head-to-head pot and then a season-long points pot. So there's multiple ways to win some scratch.
Did you do your draft yet?
No, it's actually tonight.
Oh, good luck.
Yes, thank you. They're doing it in Atlantic City. I will be doing it remotely. No AC for me.
Oh, they're down in AC?
Yeah, yeah.
They're having a big party.
They are.
And you're
no
not
No party
of
for
it.
Me. No.
No? Did you even ask your wife about that?
I didn't have to. I mean, I'm working. I got stuff to do later.
That's a great life experience,
yes,
though.
Yes.
And you bailed on that to make sure it worked.
I don't know about bailed on it, but...
Well, you said thanks, but no thanks.
Not available.
Yeah, I mean, you're a hard worker.
Wife and kids are down in Ocean City, New Jersey with
they're
the in-laws. I missed that this week as well, so I've been sick. It's been a great week, Moose. You know, it's a great way to end summer.
I know. I saw CeeLo in the newsroom. I went to go give him a hug. He's like, please don't touch me. I'm like,
no, that's not. I said, you don't want to touch. I've been sick. I don't want to get you sick.
Let me finish the point. Like, I've been sick. I was like, yeah, I do not want what you have.
That's right.
That's right. Well, good luck with your draft tonight.
Appreciate that.
Sounds like it's going to be a blast. Doing remote.
Me sitting at home and everyone else in AC. Good to see you as always, Moose.
Pleasure's mine. Let's head out to New Hyde Park. It's Howard. It's the fan. What's going on, Howard?
Hey, Moose. Great show.
Thanks, Howard. What's on your mind, buddy?
So, I've been a Cowboys fan for 45 years. Yeah. And to tell you the truth, I'm okay with this trade. It sounds crazy, but I think the downfall was when Micah started going on social media, you know, months ago and started talking and being very boisterous. And Jerry wants to be the voice of the team. He doesn't want anybody else trying to steal his, you know, his steam and everything. And once he started going on all the podcasts and talking his junk, I think it started going downhill from there. And to tell you the truth, I mean, if you look at the big games he played in, even in the playoffs, he didn't come up big. These teams schemed for him, and he didn't produce. He was almost non-existent, in that last game, in that last playoff game.
Well, Howard, let me ask you, do you think the fact that his presence on the field opens things up for other people?
Yes and no. Yes, I think sometimes he's out there just trying to get his numbers, and he was out there when the run was so bad last year.
What's it going to feel like if the Packers win the Super Bowl this year?
To tell you the truth, we weren't winning the Super Bowl either.
Well, it doesn't
matter. I was already sold
out. When you trade, because you go through the draft to get players of the caliber of Micah Parsons. Do you not? Like, and when you have that individual in the fold, now you're trying to rationalize it out. I mean, Howard, you're looking at it, and, you're Jerry's dream. You're a Cowboy fan. That's A-okay. There's a lot of Cowboy fans that are depressed. I think there's a lot of people in the NFC East, whether you're a Giant fan, Washington fan, Philadelphia fan, that celebrates and say, oh, great. That headache is no longer in our division, having to deal with number 11 wearing a Cowboys jersey. I mean, that's the way I look at it. You want to say, well, you could look at the 4 years and, you know, he didn't come up big in big moments, big games. Okay. Tell me how life's going to be easier, because all I do know now is that Kenny Clark is basically the best run-stuffing defensive tackle the NFL's ever seen, based on what I listened to last night from Jerry and Stephen Jones. Now, they didn't say, quote-unquote, that very fact, but they're going to be able to stop the run now because of Kenny Clark. A lot of pressure on him. Let's head out to Watchung, New Jersey. It's Sam. It's the fan. What's going on, Sammy?
Good morning, Moose.
Good morning.
Pleasure to talk to you again. I talked to you quite some time ago.
Pleasure's all mine, Sam. What's on your mind?
My doggies might start barking. Okay, my man. Anthony Volpe, right? Now, did you watch the game last night?
I did see the highlight. I was at the Rutgers game, but I did watch the condensed version, yes.
Well, here's my take with Mr. Volpe. Yeah, he's really having a hard time at the plate, but in the field, he's been very good, and he made really great plays yesterday. But the one ever he made cost the Yankees 4 runs. It's just the way things happen in baseball. The play in question is, it was the grounder up the middle, right? He kind of didn't catch it right, and then he knew not to throw it. I think the actual second base threw him off.
the second baseman threw him off, or the second base bag?
No, the second base bag, yes, sir.
I gotcha.
Just that little. I'm just saying. I think it happened because it. So he made unbelievable backhand plays going towards third base, towards the outfield, and he got them both. My thing is, I think his stick is going to come around because he's not that bad of a hitter. It's just going through it in his head. And he hasn't made an error until yesterday, and it wasn't a throwing error.
I mean, Sam, can I ask you a question, though? How long do you wait? How long do you wait? When does the patience run out? And when do you look at it and say, well, you know, he's too good of a hitter. He's got to be better than this. When do you say, okay, well, it's a lost season? How much patience do you
show? I think he's going to get some big hits for the Yankees going forward, and I don't think he's going to have a problem in the infield going forward.
Sam, listen, I wish I had your confidence.
And there is one more thing. Can you let me say one more thing about Chris McMonagle?
Yeah.
He told a story, and I heard it twice, in Vegas, where he bumped into you. And the rest, I can't tell the story.
Okay.
Isn't that true or no?
Yeah, no, that's true.
I mean, you know the story, not me.
I've told that story before. Yeah. I don't know, was that a gotcha moment? I don't know. Like, Chris is not lying. Yes. I was in Vegas with myself, Monzo, Licata, and Giannotti. Monzo bumped into McMonagle, I think, at Pure Nightclub. I had to carry Licata basically back to the room to put him to bed. Then I came down at 2:30 in the morning and met McMonagle and then helped him get an internship here at WFAN. So yeah, I don't know what version of the story, I don't know what he added to it, but people have referenced that before. And I've told that story before on the line as well, on the air as well. But yeah, all that's true. That's a long time ago. I think that was the trip that Licata and I have a picture with Manute Bol, amazingly enough, at Pure Nightclub in Vegas. I think it's Caesars. It's strange, right? Odd one. But yeah, there was Manute Bol, who had little to no interest of taking a picture with us. But we snapped it anyway. We got that picture anyway. Mario, Staten Island. God rest his soul. What's going on, Mario?
Mark, what's happening, man? How are you?
Good, Mario. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. Listen, I wanted to comment just even with what the other guy said. You know, I'm a Cowboy fan too, 45 years. And, you know, I tell you, I kind of see both sides. Like, I don't love the deal. I don't hate it. What I hate about it is who we traded him to. I hate that, you know, our picks are going to be late picks. But, you know, Mark, I look at it even with what the Pats used to do. Now, look, I know they had Tom Brady, and that's my gripe with Dallas. They're never going to win with Dak Prescott. But the Patriots wouldn't pay anybody, and I just don't think in the league today you can. I don't think that you can pay three guys top dollar and expect to win in this league. And again, don't get me wrong, I'm not comparing to the Patriots. I'm not, and that's why the Pats did it, because they had Tom Brady. And again, we're not going to win ever with Dak Prescott. But you know, when you're tying all your money to Lamb, Dak, and then now Parsons, then you're not left with anything. Look, next year we have the second most cap space behind the Patriots. Okay, now I don't know what we're going to do with it because we have two bozos running the organization. But I'm just saying, I don't think it was a horrendous deal, But look, you're going to have to see kind of how this plays out. They weren't winning with him, and they're not going to win without him. But now you're going to have to in these next couple of years really work the draft.
No, Mario, that's great. But let me ask you, is Micah better at his position than Dak is at his?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Now, listen, Mark, I 100% would have, if it was me, Mark, I would have paid Parsons and Lamb. I would have let Dak go.
Right,
so, I have a problem with the Jones family with that.
No, and that's fair, right? That is fair when you're looking at it. And listen, it's a quarterback-driven league. You understand why they went out and paid the quarterback in Dak Prescott. I just don't like, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a Cowboy fan. Didn't grow up a Dallas Cowboy fan, right? Not America's
team. I know, yeah. I know you're a Commanders guy.
But look at it this way, Mario. I don't think it's good for an NFL team to lose great players.
I agree with you there.
I really don't.
I do agree with you there.
I don't think we get all excited and during the NFL draft and comps and players and all this stuff of what that individual is going to be here moving forward. And, you know, potential was realized. Micah Parsons is a difference maker. Now it's a case, and you're not alone, Mario. I had another call from a Cowboy fan saying, better off. You're calling up saying, I don't want to pay him. It's going to be very difficult to win. I would not bring, because we've gotten down this road before, and not just the Cowboys, but if you're a Cowboy, never compare yourself. Nobody should ever compare themselves or draw a comparison to what Belichick and Brady did up in New England. That was ridiculously special. And nobody's going to be able to do that again. With that kind of dominance, with that kind of consistency, with that kind of business model. Salomon Alapin's up next to the fan. What's going on, Sal?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Sal, good. Doing well.
I called to talk about Rutgers. I know I'm probably the only one, but
I was at the game. No, it's football. Fire away.
Yeah, I mean, the offense was better than I expected. I expected it to be good, but I was so pleasantly surprised that we were able to put up the points. But the defense is obviously a major concern. I know it's only one game, but in looking at it, and the quarterback for Ohio, Navarro, is very good, but we can't tackle. It seems to be that same, bend but don't break type offense where they get the guys across the middle that are wide open. And with every Shiano defense, we always have a problem when the quarterback is mobile. I mean, does he not, philosophy-wise, does he not need to make changes maybe in the philosophy because we're playing so many athletic quarterbacks and we seem to get burnt year after year after year? Or am I being too negative and saying, be patient, wait, the defense is going to come around?
Well, I think there's concerns on defense. I think when you had the loss of the defensive coordinator, Rob Smith now coming back as co-defensive coordinator this year, the change that you saw in the defensive secondary, Jabomi is a hell of a middle linebacker and was a tackling machine last year. I think he had 102 tackles for the Scarlet Knights and had a really good year, and they're expecting him to take a bounce forward. I would say this last night, if you go back, I think the defense is going to be a work in progress. And I do the shows with, the pre and post game with Julian Pinnix-Odrick. JPO was a defensive end for Rutgers a number of years ago, and he's great. But watching the game with him and looking at some of the defensive breakdowns, it's really guys, due to maybe inexperience, maybe not doing what they're supposed to be doing within the defense. Not setting the edge.
You're saying there's hope.
Yeah, I mean, Sal, listen, if you're asking me right now what's going to be the driving force to Rutgers this year, it's going to be the offense. Kalik Manis, who I interviewed a couple weeks ago when I was down at Piscataway, talked about the fact that he's got to improve his accuracy. He did. He got playmakers at the wide receiver position. DT Sheffield showed off his speed last night. They're going to be able to replace the production of Kyle Manungai, who's now a Chicago Bear, the former Don Bosco prep star, with Campbell and obviously Antoine Raymond in that running back room. I think the offensive line is going to be good enough. I think the offense is going to be really the reason why this year. The defense, I think it's going to take a little bit of time. And there's certainly things that you need to work on following what you saw last night down in Piscataway. Let's head out to Poughkeepsie. It's Jim. It's the fan. What's going on, Jim?
What's up, Moose? How are you?
I'm doing well, Jimmy. How are you, buddy?
Good. I got to touch base on this whole Micah Parsons. I'm a Cowboy fan. I say good riddance, bro. The guy's played in 4 playoff games and recorded 1 sack.
Good riddance.
You're telling me he's a difference? You're telling me he's a difference maker. What difference has he made in the postseason? Getting 1 sack in a game we lost by 30 points.
He's the singular reason why the Cowboys lost.
Dude, 1 sack in 4 games. Can you show up in the postseason?
No, he's basically the average in the NFL. I get it. What about Dak?
He's more worried about his pocket.
Does he hold any responsibility to that?
But we're not talking about Dak. We're talking about Micah Parsons.
So you're
Micah
better
Parsons
off.
Micah Parsons has done nothing. He's done nothing in the postseason.
Neither of the Dallas Cowboys is a team.
But we're not talking about the team. We're talking about this one player right now.
Right, so you're looking at if he had eight sacks in those four games and you still lost, you'd be upset.
But that ain't the point. The point is he did not show up. Where was he?
Why so you're happy. Yesterday was a good day for Dallas.
Yes, goodbye. Goodbye.
He's more worried about crazy. I mean, Jim, I think you're crazy. I think you're trying to rationalize it out. Goodbye to you, too, as well. Goodbye, good luck. And enjoy Micah Parsons wearing the Green Bay Packer jersey. I don't think, like, I don't know. I mean, like, I look at it and say, there's different reasons why. Guys can go out there and make an impact on a defense, too, because of the amount of coverage that they're going to get, how opposing the offensive coordinators have to make sure that they contain that individual so that individual can't wreak havoc either. Could Parsons be better in some of those games? Yeah, but you can make an argument about a lot of guys. An edge rusher that I think has got 52 sacks in 4 years in the National Football League is 26 years old, and yesterday was a good day for the Dallas Cowboys with the decision to move him to Green Bay, who's trying to win a Super Bowl this year. Okay. I mean, I guess. Let's head out to the Bronx. It's Mike. I mean, that's a take. What's going on, Mike? How are you, bud?
Hi, how are you? I love your show.
Thanks, Mike. What's on your mind, buddy?
I'm a huge Jets fan, and I'm sort of waiting to see on the Jets this year. But I do like to point out, why I could be optimistic this year. Just because, like, the biggest knock on the Jets that all experts are saying is quarterback and the receiver core. Well, you do see other teams, even the modern-day NFL, the biggest example of hope the Jets could have is the Titans in the late 2010s. You know, that Titan team had, you know, they had Derrick Henry. We have a similar back, not as good, but like a poor man's Derrick Henry, but our line is much better than theirs. The receiver core was one big A.J. Green, A.J. Brown, wow, and a bunch of whatevers. And their defense is not as – was just a good, tough defense, nothing special. But they were able to, because they played a good, tough brand of football, they were able to help their mediocre quarterback out, and they were able to have a good season and play a lot of teams that were much better than them, beat them because they were just so tough and able to keep games close and just, you know, and will their way to a lot of wins, which they should not have won.
Are you talking about the Mariota Titans or the Tannehill
Titans? No, Tannehill Titans.
Oh, the Tannehill Titans. Okay. Tannehill was a better...
I think if you're going to have hope, like, that's where you're looking, this Jets, you know, that the toughness and the inside of both sides of the ball to be able to muck up games and be able to win games, which you shouldn't win, you know, and I think that's where I think we're a Jets fan. I think that's where we have to hope. And I do want to say that, the one thing consistent you see in this team, you know, all preseason, which you have to take with a grain of salt, but they knocked everyone around inside all preseason long. Starters, second team, didn't matter. They killed everyone inside all preseason long, you know, and that's just one-on-one matchups, you know. And I do think that this team does have potential to if you have hope for this team, I think that's where
you hope. I got you. Mike, you're a positive Pete. You're going into the holiday weekend, and you're very, very bullish on the New York Jets. The issue, the only, you know, knock in your argument, and you kind of said it, well, the Jets don't have Derrick Henry, and Tannehill's better than Justin Fields. And Tannehill wasn't great. And they lost their mind when they went into that playoff game and decided to basically not be themselves and wanted to have Tannehill throw the ball all over the lot, and that ended up in disaster. But, you know, put that aside. Tannehill's better than Justin Fields throwing the football. But you want to look out and say that's the way that I think there's no doubt the Jets are going to go into this season, set a tone, and want to run it. I kicked off the program yesterday and talked about fear, right? Talked about, you know, when you compare the Mets and the Yankees, the fear factor in terms of, and this is not an inherent knock. You can look at it, and I think the Yankee fan, believe me, the vocal Yankee fan could get a little bit sensitive to the matter. They don't want to give any comps, any kind of, they don't want to give any love or appreciation to the New York Mets. And I get it. I mean, because Juan Soto left in free agency and they look at the Mets as, and the Met fan is a little bit more of annoyance than anything else. And don't want to hear about the money of Steve Cohen and, Nolan McClain, now Jonah Tong tonight. We'll get into Tong, and what to expect tonight against the Miami Marlins. But if the message was lost, I mean, it bears worth repeating. The fear aspect of it is not necessarily, and the Mets did not back up. And maybe it was a little bit of a come down moment after they swept the Philadelphia Phillies. Make no excuse. I mean, the Mets have got to go out there and make it to the postseason. I think they will in the National League, and I think the Yankees are going to make it in the American League as well. The fear factor is the Mets all of a sudden finding it. You know, a team that's been largely inconsistent throughout the course of the summer. It's been a frustrating watch when you're looking at the New York Mets. Last night, a perfect case in point, you know, the three errors that you saw, Nimmo and obviously Alonso, the 500 runs by the Miami Marlins. You lose the game 7-4. You had the big moment, you know, middle of the game, the big two-run home run, 30th of the season by Pete Alonso, as, you know, his future in Queens is in question, determined on. And I've heard a number of people say, well, you got to go out there and sign him now. My answer to that would be why. Like, does Steve Cohen look like an idiot? Is he worth $22 billion because he's a moron? No, he's worth $22 billion because he's really smart, right? And he understands the marketplace and has been really, really efficient. He's done a wonderful job in terms of making a great atmosphere at Citi Field. So he's not going to necessarily go out there and pay Polar Bear, Pete Alonso, the contract that he's looking for right now. He'll let him go out there and hit free agency and see exactly what the marketplace is for Pete Alonso at his rate, with no what his marketplace is another year older. And he's not going to go out there and pay for emotion for what a player is. He's going to play a player for what he is going to be. And that's really the concern that the Mets have had. That's a story more for the offseason about Alonso and how he's going to age. But you give Pete a lot of credit. Reworked his swing. He's had a huge year. He's had big moments this year. And you thought last night, you know, after he tied the game up at 4 with that big two-run bomb, that it was going to be another one of those moments, and it turned out not to be. So did the Marlins necessarily fear the Mets? The question, it's not necessarily individual, and the Mets have got to go out there and play consistent. It's more a case of that Met team last year, the penchant for the moment, the big moment, getting the superlative pitching performance, getting the big hit when it counted the most, Lindor, Alonso against Milwaukee, Vientos against the Dodgers, like all the things that we saw. And I understand the run ended in Game 6 in the National League Championship Series against Los Angeles, but that's why this team came into this year with the addition of Soto, with Manaea back, and Kodai Senga, and David Peterson, and Edwin Diaz. That's why this group, you had great expectations of this team taking that very next step this season. That's the fear aspect. Now, they've got to go out there and back it up. And one game, and we're not going to overreact on this Friday from a bad performance last night. I mean, that's not the way that it works in Major League Baseball. If you do that, I mean, you'll be like basically a roller coaster. You'll be up and down, day in and day out. That's not what you do. You see how a team is trending. And I understand for the last 2 months, you're going to look at it, the Mets have not played great baseball consistently. Now, that obviously has got to change with 28 games to go in the course of the MLB regular season. We've talked about the brilliance of Nolan McClain and his three starts pitching to a .89 ERA and what you hope to expect. And as you heard the cut played by CeeLo at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, what you hope from Jonah Tong tonight is he's going to be sporting number 21, the old jersey number of Max Scherzer, is that Jonah Tong is able to be just as dominant on the major league level as he was in Double A and Triple A, which was brilliant. And he's one of the best pitching prospects in all of Major League Baseball. And he's a little bit different and has that big extension like a Tim Lincecum used to have with the San Francisco Giants when he was a wonderkin. And we'll see exactly what Tong is able to provide himself. And here's where you give the Mets credit. The Mets realized they had nowhere else to turn. And I don't think it was in really the wherewithal for the Mets this year to rush these guys to the major league level. They had to show that they were ready. And the Mets also had, compound with the fact that the Mets had a desperate need. The starting rotation was not viable. Going 4+ innings, you know, every man through that rotation, having to sit there before he got injured and watch Frankie Montas, whether he was starting the game or coming into the game in the second inning, it didn't matter. Frankie Montas on the mound is a disaster. The injury to Kodai Senga in June, the bad throw from Alonso to first base to get the runner at first where he injured his hamstring, the inconsistency that we've seen from Manaea, the dip in velocity as compared to the late life on the fastball that we saw last year. The Mets, and David Peterson was an all-star this year, but you know, and he's been good for the better part of the season and very good at times. The Mets had a gaping hole when you're looking at that starting rotation that they needed to resolve and tried to do at the MLB trade deadline, and they couldn't get the job done. So therefore, they've turned to their youngsters who had to show on the minor leagues that they were ready to take advantage of their opportunity here on the major league level. Now, Nolan McClain, we've seen it in three starts. I mean, he's been damn right impressive. There's nothing not to like. His ability to go out there and throw strikes, throw 8 innings of 4-hit shutout baseball the other night against the Philadelphia Phillies, 95 pitches, 71 strikes, all of that is great. The ability to go out there and keep hitters off balance, it's refreshing. It's great. It's unbelievable to watch, especially in today's day and age with the de-emphasis of the starting rotation and the starters on the whole, to watch a young man step into it, throw in a pressurized situation, looking to get an opportunity with a team with expectations and handle all that brilliantly. Now, what do you expect tonight from Tong? I don't know. I'm excited to watch, though. I love the backstories. Love the story and loved him when he met with the media and talking about the fact he called his mom and, you know, was bawling out his eyes for the better part of an hour after he asked her, what are you going to be doing on Friday night? Should be a packed house, as it is, has been majority of the season out at Citi Field. There is a sense of excitement, a sense of hope when you're looking at some of these young hurlers. And obviously we've seen that with McLean, and the Met fan is hoping that you're going to see similar brilliance. Maybe not just as brilliant with Jonah Tong as you've seen with Nolan McLean, because it's going to be hard to top that. If he's able to top that, then the Mets are going to be out there cooking with gas. But last night was a slop fest. There's no other way to... I mean, that's one where you, if you can literally flush it down the toilet, that is exactly what you would do, because it was downright ugly. The errors in the field, you had moments, Soto not coming through, bullpen an issue, situational hitting. I mean, any way you cut it, you know, and, you know, you got a competitive start, but unfortunately, the back end was not great, and they were not helped out by the guys behind them. Nimmo, I mean, whenever you have a game, I don't care who the opponent is, and you are able, you give up, you know, 3-4, in essence, last night, 5 unearned runs. I mean, you're going to find your way. Unless your offense is ridiculous that night, and the pitching is non-competitive from the opponent, you're going to find a way to end up losing that game. Let's head out to Scotch Plains. It's Ryan. It's the fan. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, Moose, how you doing? It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm a big fan. I have a comment about Griffin King. And let me just start by saying, in my personal life, I'm a Yankee fan. But when it comes to my fantasy baseball team, I cut all allegiances. And Griffin Canning was cooking in the beginning of the season. And I'm just wondering, you know, like how much his injury, his loss for the team has maybe, you know, affected some of those hopes, especially when it comes to the pitching staff. I'll hang up now and listen.
Well,
thanks so much for taking my call.
I mean, well, first off, Ryan, you believe in – how's your – I'm terrible at fantasy baseball. I quit a number of years ago. I just couldn't deal with it on a day-in, day-out basis. Sometimes you got to realize your strengths and weaknesses. Hoff, do you play fantasy baseball?
I do. I love it.
You love it? Like, is a day-in, day-out grind? You love it? You're attacking the waiver wire?
Yeah. Like
midnight,
every...
you're staying up late to make sure you get
hey,
the
sometimes
right
at 3 a.m., you might have to go and sneak the first free agent available if they fall off the waivers.
You're that committed? That's too much. I mean, you got kids at home. Got a loving wife who loves the fact that when you fold the laundry and put it away.
Yes, they love me. Yes.
No doubt, no doubt.
Yes, but I'm that committed. It's for the family as a whole. We want to win as a team.
By the way, could you read that text from your wife that she sent you about you not putting the laundry away properly? If you don't mind, can we pull back the covers a little bit?
Of course.
Because I'll draw a comparison to my wife after you read yours.
She did it very lovingly. After yesterday was my son's birthday, so she
Happy
has today
birthday.
Off. Yes, it was nice. Good. She said, I love you and thank you for trying to help, but please don't put the clothes away when you're done folding them. Let me know. I'll be the one to put them away. The kids have lost a significant amount of clothes, and I'm finding them all over the place. Thank you so much. This isn't an insult. Just ask. I appreciate all you do. Thank you.
Yeah, see, I would never get that text. My wife loves me most days. But that is a very, very courteous way of saying, please stop.
Yes.
That's a very courteous way of please, you know, you're embarrassing yourself. See, Donna would basically say, and I have done it. You know, I put clothes and I put them in the wrong spots. I actually ask my kids sometimes, like when I'm folding the clothes, whose shorts are these or whose shirts are these? And they'll tell me and whatever. Sometimes I put them in the wrong drawers. They're trying to find stuff. They can't find it when you get into hockey season, wear their undergarments, all this kind of stuff. So my wife would not be as kind with the touch. Like, I give your wife a ton of credit. Very kind. My wife would be basically like, stop embarrassing yourself. You're an idiot. You're not helping me. You're hurting the process.
Well, I'm concerned. That was written rather
well.
You're
making my life harder. Please stop making my life harder.
It's
hard enough as it is. I'm exhausted. Please stop. You can't do it. I'm like, I'm trying to help. I know, but you're... It's really bad.
And you have three boys, too, like me, where it's like, it's tough to distinguish whose is what. It's impossible.
Like, oftentimes I think about, remember The Dark Knight Rises when Bane is in that scene with that guy, the money man, and he, the guy that gave him all the kind of money, and he goes, you think you're in control. And he goes, well, I've paid you a small fortune. What does that have to do with me? Well, it's similar in nature. Like, when I'm home, like, I'm not the one that wears the pants of the family. Donna is. Like, nor am I when I'm in the kid car with the kids. Like, last night, not only was I dealing with the fact of dealing with the tar and the paving on the Merritt Parkway, but also before that, I'm dealing with my son having to listen to the same song over and over and over again as I'm driving up the New Jersey Turnpike. I mean, it's just time again. Can we listen to that again? Yes. Can we listen to that again? Yes. Passing Newark Airport. My getting my way to the GW Bridge, sitting in traffic trying to get on the GW Bridge. I'm like, please, if there is a God above, please let him fall asleep in the back.
What song was it?
What was it? It was Nature something. He was listening to a couple things. He was listening to something that he listens to on Roblox over and over again.
Oh.
They love playing that.
Oh, yeah.
Time and time again.
I have my kids have their own MP3 players and play their own stuff in their headphones. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, the problem, yeah. We've gone the headphone route. They break. They get angry. They leave them. They forget them. They've, you know, so now it's a case of I connect the car, put the Waze on, figure out, punch it in, trying to get out of the parking lot. It tells me I'm going to take me 2 hours to get home. He's still fired up. You know, because after the post-game show, threw some footballs with him and stuff like that, and he had a grand old time. Rutgers wins the game. Then fighting traffic on the New Jersey Turnpike, and then we're listening to the same thing over and over again. What's Benson Barnes or what? There's some song.
Benson Boone?
Yes. What's his song?
They were just talking about it yesterday. I forgot the name of it, but hold on. I'll find it.
It was that song. It was the Benson Boone song over and over and over again. Like, you think about, like, that drive home. It's 11:15 at night. Long way home. Beautiful things. Thank you. Long drive home. It was just a long drive home. It was one where I got pulled into the driveway. You've been there before. You take a deep breath, and then it's on to the next battle. Getting them to bed. Walking Chip. Trying to get to sleep. My son Gregory also asked me a fascinating question last night during the Rutgers game that I'll get to here momentarily. It just shows you, like, the kids, young kids, there's just no, they'll say whatever's on their mind. It really is. But when I was, like, a kid and I was, like, my dad would drive or my mom would drive or whatever it might be, my dad and my mom were divorced when I was young, when I was six, right? But whenever I got into the car, and, like, we'd go on a long drive. Like, I'd go out to my Uncle Pete's in Astoria or drove out to Long Island, whatever it might be. Like, my dad had, like, control of the radio. Like, we were listening to CBS FM. You know, we were listening to Elvis, the Righteous Brothers. My dad had control of the radio. Be like, oh, can we flip on Z100 or we can put it on PLJ, whatever it might be at the time. My dad would be like, are you driving? Be like, no. So, no, you can't. We're going to listen to this. So, therefore, like, yeah, you grow an appreciation. So, nowadays, like, you think you're in control. Well, this is how it works. I mean, maybe other households. I'm sure they're different because my wife calls me a softie all the time and I have little to no control. But, you know, now you get in the car and the kids basically, in order to have some semblance of peace, like just to be able to breathe with the kids not fighting and arguing with one another, like I give up control of the radio. Allow them to listen to what they want to listen to. Because I'll deal with that and deal with that song being played over and over and over again. If my son is satisfied, he's at peace, he's good, he's this and that, so I could concentrate on the road. That's really where it's at. I told my kids one day, they're like, my dad drove, he had control of the radio. And you're like, well, that's not then, this is now. I'm like, all right, thank you. So I'm watching the Rutgers game last night before we get back to the busy phones. My son Gregory is a huge football fan, loves football, loves playing flag football. We're not getting into the tackle, not doing that, concerned about all that. So we're watching the game. It's third quarter. Ohio's driving. They're about to tie the game up. And my son's into it. He's sitting in between JPO and myself. And he turns to me and he goes, Daddy, can I ask you a question? I'm like, yeah, what do you got? He's like, when I'm playing college football, will you be alive? I'm like, what? He's like, when, you know, will you be able to watch me? I go, yeah, I hope. Gregor, that's like in 10 years. Like, how old do you think I am? It's like, well, you'll be alive, right? I'm like, yes, God willing, hopefully I'll be alive. But yes, my plan is to be there. And if you're playing college football, I'll be watching you. I have no idea. But I was like, what? Wait, why are you thinking about that? Like, why are you thinking about that? And then he's asking me guys, I was like, why would that come to your mind? He goes, I don't know. I was just curious. Will you be there to watch me? I'm like, yeah, of course I'll be there to watch you. And, you know, yes, hopefully I'll be alive. Fascinating. That one shook me. I'll be honest with you. Ohio then tied the game up. And let's head out to Bristol. It's Bill. It's the fan. What's going on, Bill?
Not much, Moose. Hey, Moose, I've been a Giant fan since the Wyatt Tittle, Del Schaffner days.
Wow.
And I want to make a point on the trade, the Parsons trade. And it's a point I haven't heard anybody make. But Jerry Jones could possibly be parlaying the two picks he got from the Packers and their first-round pick and move up in the draft next year and grab a quarterback, maybe like Arch Manning, who's in the same state, Texas, or another top quarterback.
That is a
real possibility. And then, on another point, I don't think Parsons is worth $45 million a year. I think only your quarterbacks should be making, you know, in that range. I don't think any non-quarterback is worth that money. So on those two points, he's not worth that money.
We'll see how the Cowboys and what kind of pass rush they have here in 2025 without number 11 on the field for them, and where that offense and where that defense is. And they could talk about the fact that they can scheme pressure all they want. Talent is talent. They just traded away a big-time talent in the National Football League. Here's the issue. You could have the draft capital be able to move up. It depends on the wants and the desires of the teams that are sitting in that position as well. The Giants wanted to move up to go get Jane Daniels. Washington and Adam Peters said thanks, but no thanks. The Giants tried to move up this past year to go get Cam Ward. The Tennessee Titans said, no, we want Cam Ward. So regardless of what you're going to offer us, we feel like he's our franchise quarterback. So yeah, I've heard that conversation before. Are the Cowboys going to be as bad as New Orleans this year?
No.
All right, so if you're the New Orleans Saints, and say for, and I think New Orleans is going to be terrible. So if you're the New Orleans Saints and you have the number one overall pick, if the Cowboys are sitting there and they have a late first round pick of the Green Bay Packers and they're sitting in the middle of the first round, for argument's sake, with their selection, how exactly are they then going to go up and get it? If you're New Orleans and you have the opportunity to go draft, you know, Arch Manning or Neusmeyer from LSU or Klubnik from Clemson, or Lenora Sellers from the South Carolina Gamecocks. If you have an opportunity to go get one of those guys, but for argument's sake, say it's Arch Manning. Why exactly would you move out for draft capital if you feel like Arch Manning is going to be the face of your franchise for the next 15 years and you have a solution at the quarterback position?
Well, they might not get the top quarterback, but they'll get one of the top quarterbacks. I'm just saying, that is just my take on it. Maybe Jerry Jones has that plan. Get a, you know, trade this player who's, I think, going to make too much money. Get a quarterback next year and then move on. That's it. That's all I have to say.
Bill, I pay difference makers money. Now people are going to call up and say, well, in four playoff games, he hasn't done all that much with the Dallas Cowboys. That's fine. I get it. And you can look at, you know, the inability to, you know, and some of those losses and tough losses. Okay, great. He's 26. Stats are stats when you look at his impact and the way that offensive coordinators have to put together game plans and make sure that they see and know where number 11 is on the field every single time they're trying to devise a plan, because he can absolutely be a game wrecker and a game changer. And we've seen that during the course of the regular season. Now you're thinking second, third level when you're looking at the Dallas Cowboys, that they're not. So in essence, they're punting on 2025 and looking at 2026 and beyond. And Jerry Jones, who has not won a Super Bowl in decades, at 82 years old, is now looking, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the line. Okay.